We live in between birth and death, in between each other, in between joy and sorrow. E.B. White once famously said, if the world were merely seductive, that would be easy. If the world were merely challenging, that would be no problem. But I wake up each morning torn between a desire to save the world and a desire to savor the world. This makes it very hard to plan the day. We live in between the seductive, beautiful world, the world of joy and hope, and the world of challenge, of oppression and pain. We're talking about resilience this month, about the power to stand fast in the midst of change and the ability to change despite the power of inertia. Talking about the inner strength and the strength of community. Talking about being in between, strong but not brittle, loving but not sentimental, power but not overpowering. In between the beauty and the lamentation, in between the honest concern and the genuine hope, this is where we live. We are not delusional, nor are we cynics. We are people of reason and people of love. And before the mystery of life, we offer our thanks and our praise and sometimes our silence. We celebrate while we honor the complexity of existence, such as religion and real life. Our first reading and then our anthem this morning are in the spirit of mystical celebration for this earth, apple blossomed, wondrous, real, worthy of our love. The first reading, a reflection by the Reverend Mark Bellatini. This is our earth. This is our earth. It falls through heaven like a pearl in a glass of plum wine. There are no other earths that I know of. There are no other skies that have been mapped. This is our earth. The oneness that who gave birth to it remains nameless. There was no midwife then to bring us word of the birth cry. We only rejoice that it is. This is our earth. Ice caps its head, glaciers claps its feet. Warm wind, like the breath of a lover, breathes around its breast. Mountains thrust up to the clouds, bringing joy. Storms blow across its shores, bringing fear. Silvery fish capture sunlight and haul it down into the deep, as on shore valleys spread with ripening fruit. Cities teem with the poor and disenfranchised in the shadow of golden towers. Children live and also die. Highways throb. Monks sit in silence. Mothers work, crickets chirp. Teachers plan, engineers design. Fathers write letters. People marry with and without the blessings of law. People cry. They laugh and brood and worry and wait. This is our earth. There are no other earths. Before its wonder, philosophers fall silent. Before its mystery, poets admit their words are shadow, not light. And all the great names religious teachers have left to us, Ishtar, Shekinah, Terra Mater, Suchness, Makan Tanakh, Gaia, suddenly refuse to announce themselves. And so we too fall silent, entering the time when words end and reality begins.
Thank you.
So we come with thanksgiving, with joy and hope and celebration for the apple-blossomed earth and sunrises and sunsets and spring, even when it's not quite here yet, only on the calendar. We come with thanksgiving, with love and hope and celebration for all that is good and beautiful and just. So I invite you to enter that spirit of prayer and reflection and spiritual centering, to bring to your mind and your heart that for which you are thankful this day. The face of a lover, a friend, a family member, a hope, a joy in your life, something in your work, something in your play, something in your garden, a piece of music, whatever it is that brings you hope and joy for which you are thankful today, bring that into your mind and your heart and hold it there. We offer thanks for the blessings of life, named and unnamed. We celebrate all that is good and beautiful and calls us towards our best selves, which brings us peace. We give thanks for those who work for justice and love mightily. And we give thanks for the earth, our only home, spinning in space this blue-green marble, for the seasons, the wind and the water, the plants and the soil. We give thanks. Blessed be. Amen. We begin with our love and our thanksgiving for the earth, our hope. We begin in awe and mystery and holy smokes, wow, sometimes. A rose that opens after the long winter. We begin here with powerful affection for this, our home. And since it is only those creatures and places which capture our heart, over which our heart can also break, we must admit our heart breaks. Our heart breaks for the earth's wounds, its pain and ours, and for the consequences to life, human and otherwise, caused by our actions and inactions. Our heart breaks. Once, in living memory for many of us, it was acid rain in the ozone layer, or rivers on fire, or forests cut to stumps. But now the great danger and the present reality is bigger and harder to understand. So terrible, we are sometimes paralyzed. I mean, of course, climate change. The consequences of a rapidly warming planet. The changing weather patterns and rising seas and all the attendant food and refugee and energy consequences. Today, it turns out, is the beginning of Climate Justice Month. I got a whole packet of information about it from the Unitarian Universalist Association a few months ago. Between now and Earth Day at the end of April, they want us to commit, a time to commit to respond to the crisis and the moral imperative to change our society and our lives before it really is too late. But I decided to preach on climate change today before I knew the month kicked off today. It really is just a coincidence. I decided because we're talking about resilience in March. And if we're going to slow the rate of climate change and survive it, we will need communities and lives of resilience in a way few of us have ever known. So our second reading then, from the book This Changes Everything, by Naomi Klein. We know that if we continue on our current path of allowing emissions to rise year after year, climate change will change everything about our world. Major cities will very likely drown, ancient cultures will be swallowed by the seas, and there is a very high chance that our children will spend a great deal of their lives fleeing and recovering from vicious storms and extreme droughts. And we don't have to do anything to bring about this future, all we have to do is nothing. What concerns me is less the mechanics of the transition, she writes, the shift from brown to green energy, from soul rider cars to mass transit, from sprawling exurbs to dense and walkable cities, than the power and ideological roadblocks that have so far prevented any of these long understood solutions from taking hold on anything close to the scale required. It seems to me that our problem has a lot less to do with the mechanics of solar power than the politics of human power. Specifically, whether there can be a shift in who wields it, a shift away from corporations and toward communities, which in turn depends on whether or not the great many people who are getting a rotten deal under our current system can build a determined and diverse enough social force to change the balance of power. I've also come to understand that the shift will require rethinking the very nature of humanity's power, our right to extract ever more without facing consequences, our capacity to bend complex natural systems to our will. This is a shift that challenges not only capitalism, but the building blocks of materialism that preceded modern capitalism, a mentality some call extractivism. Because underneath all of this is the real truth we have been avoiding. Climate change isn't an issue to add to the list of things to worry about, next to healthcare and taxes and all the rest. It is a civilizational wake-up call, a powerful message, spoken in the language of fires, floods, droughts, and extinctions, telling us that we need an entirely new economic model and a new way of sharing this planet, telling us that we need to evolve. Words of lamentation and concern, a call to action. 2,500 years ago, the people of Israel were conquered by an invading army, and some of them were taken off to a strange land to live as refugees, exiled from their homes, and they sang songs of lamentation. Gathered by the rivers of that strange land, Babylon, they wept for their homes. They prayed that things would change. We weep too, for refugees of violence and rising seas, of storms and droughts, and we weep for life lost and difficult futures, and we hope for change, that our hearts and our thoughts will be strong enough. So let us sing. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We're going to sing By the Waters of Babylon, the version in your teal hymnal, By the Rivers of Babylon, 1042, and I do encourage you, if you read music at all, to use the book. It will be very helpful. If you don't, it doesn't matter. Just look at the words up here. Or if you already know it, you can also just look at the words up here. So I invite you to rise in body or spirit. Let's sing.
Thank you.
May be seated. Songs of lamentation and sorrow, a hope for healing and peace. And so I invite you back into that spirit of prayer and centering reflection to bring to your mind and your heart that which gives you worry. Those in your life who need the power of healing, perhaps it is yourself. And in that spirit of prayer and attention, I invite you to bring those faces and names into your heart. Those who are ill and face suffering, those in grief, economic hardship, and personal trouble. To bring also to your heart those worries of the world, in particular the health of our planet, but not just that. That which is on your heart. To pull it into your attention. And to resolve yourself to be a person of mercy for yourself and others, a person of love, to heal what you can and love all, to serve justice, to be compassionate for one another, for we each have our own private pains, and to love this broken and beautiful world all you can. I invite us into silence that you might give that energy of healing and hope to those thoughts and presences in your own being as a precursor to doing it in the real world. Let us enter into silence. May hope and love and mercy be with us and each other and all the world this day and every day. Amen, and blessed be. We live in between birth and death, in between each other, in between beauty and tragedy, in between dreams of creation and visions of apocalypse. In between celebration and lamentation. And I was torn, thinking about what to say this morning. I was torn between the seduction of the world and hope and technological fixes and so on, torn between that on one hand and the challenges of the world on the other, the massive existential threat of climate change. I was torn. There are folks who talk only about the challenges, the disaster, the trouble. The world's target, the international agreement, says we're going to try to hold enough carbon back so that we only raise the temperature of the Earth on average by 2 degrees Celsius. That's not going to happen. 4 degrees Celsius is more likely on average. That's 7 degrees Fahrenheit. Folks expect perhaps a 1 to 2 meter rise in sea level at 4 degrees Celsius. 2 meters is almost 6 feet. Miami, New York, Boston, Sao Paulo, Mumbai, Shanghai, New Orleans, all would be underwater. The desert grows, people starve and flee, states fail, war spreads. This is a possible future. It's not the worst case scenario. It isn't. It's the middle picture, increasingly the more likely one. The worst case is 6 degrees Celsius. 10 to 15 feet of sea level rise, 500 million refugees or more, mass extinctions of animal life, ocean die-off, and massive desertification. The Sahara almost everywhere. This isn't science fiction, I'm afraid. This is real, and it is already beginning to happen. It is a moral wake-up call for our civilization as a whole, not just for us as individuals. It's not enough for us as individuals to live differently. It would help a lot. If everyone in this country used as little energy as the average conscientious Unitarian Universalist, we'd have a dramatic reduction in carbon emissions. It'd be great, but it wouldn't be enough. We need changes in public policy, in power generation technology and consumption practices, changes in international law and municipal building codes. Personal behavior can help, but it isn't enough. And so that was one option for this sermon: be really brutally honest about the challenges before us. Talk about the danger and the need to rise up against the powers that be, or frankly, head for the hills. Plant your backyard garden, join the commune, and just try to hang on. That was one option. If you read another set of people, on the other hand, other authors, you get a very different story. And I do not mean here the climate change deniers, those who deny the reality of what is happening. They are not remotely credible. I understand the impulse. Sometimes the problem is so bad we refuse to look at it. We all do that sometimes. The Environmental Department of Florida, the state most vulnerable to climate change, has had an informal policy of refusing to use the words climate change for the last few years, as if the beaches will not wash away, as if the city will not drown, as if refusing to say the word Voldemort will make him disappear. Now, I don't mean climate change deniers, their heads stuck in the sand and their hands stuck in the pockets of oil barons. I mean, when I speak of a different story, those who take the problem very seriously, who understand the science and know the reality, but have hope. I mean folks who see the rapidly falling prices of solar and wind power, who see a rising movement for change, who see possibilities of a carbon-free energy future, a dramatic slowdown in warming, such that we can, with intention and purpose, help the most vulnerable survive, even build stronger societies and networks, and in fact, build a better and fairer and more just economy and a world for all people, who see that climate change, in fact, leaves us with no choice but to reinvent our economies, our definitions of success and power, the way we live on and with the earth, even maybe most of all, to change our spiritual orientation from toward creation and life itself, to move from busyness to simplicity, from extractionism to joyfulness. Those who have hope believe that we can and are changing things. They look at technology and the way that things are changing and think that if we band together and rise up together and embrace some of these new ideas, we can do remarkable things for the planet and the future. Naomi Klein doesn't find her hope in technological fixes or changing corporate governance like some others do. But she does end her book on a hopeful note. She says that what will save us in the end, and it is only a possibility, not a sure thing, but what can save us in the end is love. Love of place, of the earth, and each other. A powerful, passionate love that will motivate a mass movement for change. A movement that will change our economy from extraction to sustainability, change our politics from winner-take-all to the common good, and change our story from conquering to coexisting. That's a big hope. Of course it is. But such things, democracy, abolition, women's suffrage, civil rights, the first wave of the environmental movement, such things have happened before. A group of people stand together, work together, and change the world. So there are the choices I faced as your preacher. Go with the brutal truth or talk more about hope. Make you scared or reassure you. Makes it hard to plan the day. I spent a lot of time thinking about which way to go, but in the end, there's really only one answer. Keep on loving. Love, not naive or sentimental, but love of place and justice and life itself. Yes, things are not good. Warming is happening and it is bad news. it might be worse. So we will need to build a different kind of society, a different kind of economy, just to survive the coming change. We need local food, local power, local sustainability. But here's the good news. If we act as if the worst is coming, if we become resilient in the face of this threat, it is our very chance to stop the worst from happening. The things we need to do to prepare will prevent the worst from coming. And they'll do more than that. They'll create more justice and more beauty in the world. At least they can. The city has no life in it. The people stay indoors, the concrete runs everywhere. But a love of beauty and a cultivation of one local place, one little garden on top of the train tracks, and look what happens. The whole place changes. If you had said to our little gardener, Liam, make this whole city bloom, he would have said, that's too much, I can't do that. But that's what he did. We have to do things in our own individual lives. Small acts, garden, eat less or no beef, install solar panels, walk, vote, and so forth. You know the list. Many of you do the list every day. By itself, each one of those things won't change things enough, not one action by itself, but thousands, millions of people buying solar panels brought down the price dramatically, and more folks are buying them every day, and that's making a difference. You never know how your choices might ripple through the waters of life. Build the resilient community that we need to survive food shortages from drought. Build the democratic structures that we need to challenge the systems of extractionism. Build the affordable housing that we need to welcome refugees from climate-affected cities and countries who will be coming to places like the upper Midwest where we will still be able to grow food here. Build the resilient community where folks can walk places, where we know our neighbors can count on each other. Do that, and two things might happen. One, we will have better lives with more meaning and fairness and beauty, more connected to each other. And two, we might stave off the worst of the coming changes and make climate change difficult, but not disastrous. One of the nation's foremost climate activists, a man who's been talking about this and getting people organized for a long time, is a man named David Roberts. My sister, who's been working on climate change since I can remember, since she was a young teenager, 20 years or more, introduced his work to me. We were sitting around our dining room table in Seattle last New Year's, and we were talking about climate change, and I mentioned that I was going to be preaching about it in March and talking about it, and she's been in that hopeless place, worried about 6 degrees Celsius, what it means, about the inability of our political structure to challenge the systems of power, about the deniers and the skeptics, and how they prevent forward movement of any kind. And she's been in that hopeless place, but she gets up every day, and she goes to work doing energy efficiency planning for a city of 130,000 people, reducing emissions by tons and tons of carbon every day, and saving the taxpayers in that city a lot of money at the same time. She's making a lot of progress. She's one person. Millions of people are doing that around the world. And she shared with me this article by David Roberts about where we find hope. And it is this: the passionate love of place and people and justice. And that we don't know what will save us, and so we should try as much as possible. Roberts talks about how we're stuck between the impossible and the unthinkable. The impossible, by which he means changing our system and acting together internationally and intentionally on an unprecedented scale. The impossible and the unthinkable. Not acting, not changing, and the end of functional civilization as we know it. And so then he asks, given that those are the options, the impossible and the unthinkable, where does hope then come from? And he writes this: if you say there will be a series of brilliant innovations that make clean energy cheap, or there will be a sea change in public opinion on climate, or young people will take over and revive politics, you sound like a hippie dreamer. Those aspirations are a matter of faith, a triumph of hope over experience. And yet, things change. Things can appear stable for years and years while tensions gather beneath the surface, hairline fractures develop, and the whole system becomes highly sensitive to small changes. Some choices, if they happen at just the right moment, could be just the changes that spark cascading effects in social, economic, and technological systems. Some of those choices, in other words, will be incredibly significant. Which ones? That we cannot know. It could be any of them, at any time. Precisely because we cannot know, because any one of our choices might be the proverbial butterfly's wings, we must act. We must take advantage of every affordance, grasp every opportunity. We don't know when history might unlock the door, and so we have no choice but to keep pushing on it. And really, what else are we going to do? Remember, there is no too late here, no game over. It'll be a tragedy to shoot past 2 degrees to 3, but 4 is worse than 3, and 5 is worse than 4. Being unprepared for any of those will be much worse than being prepared. The future always forks. There are always better and worse paths ahead, and there's always a difference to be made. When we ask for hope, then, he continues, I think we're just asking for fellowship. The weight of climate change, like any weight, is easier to bear with others. And if there's anything I've learned in these years, it's that there are many, many others. They're out there. People of extraordinary imagination, courage, and perseverance pouring themselves into this fight for a better future. You are not alone, and as long as you are not alone, there is always hope. When my sister gave me that article, I thought, well, that's how the sermon ends. As long as you are not alone, there is always hope. The way is hard and the stakes are very high. Take courage, friends. For deep down, there is another truth. You are not alone. Look up. Others garden to turn the abandoned city into beauty. The earth itself sings with joy and lamentation, and we sing with the whole of creation. This is our home, our planet drifting in space, our only world, and we love it. And because we love it, we shall not let it go down without a fight. Shake off your despair, for it is neither helpful nor true. We don't know what action will make the key difference, but something will, so let's try. Speak up, call and write those with supposed power, and don't stop until the whole world wakes up. Rise as one and remembers that no matter where we live or what we do with our lives, we share this blue boat home together. We are all kin, one family together. And if we are to survive the storm, we will only do it together. Let us be bold in our loving, in our living. Be courageous, be hopeful without naivete or turning away. And build the lives, the communities, and the world we wish to live in for this day and all the days to come. And let us sing. Let's rise in body or spirit.